Hey, good morning, everybody. Welcome back to Parsha Explorations. This week we have the opportunity to learn Parsha's Tetzaveh. Excited to learn some Torah with you. I do want to make sure to thank those who sponsor our learning this week, just before we begin. Make sure I got the right names. So, as always, thanking our sponsors. I'd like to thank, just one more minute. Sorry. Apologies for this. I'd like to thank this week's Shiur, which is sponsored by Suzanne and Charles Littman, in memory of his father, Sam Littman, Shmuel ben Yecheskel, Alav Hashalom, and also this week of learning was sponsored by Beth Gorin, in memory of her grandmother, Esther Goodman, Alav Hashalom, and her neshama also had an aliyah. It's nice to learn with you. Beginning Parshat Tetzaveh. Tetzaveh is predominantly, at least the first half. Let me actually back up a second. The first half of Tetzaveh is about the Big Day Kahuna, the priestly garments, which we'll speak about for a few minutes this morning. And the second half is about the actual process of inaugurating the Mishkan and what Aharon HaKohen and his sons had to do, the sacrifices they had to bring, etc. What's a little peculiar is the way the parsha begins. Everybody can hear me okay? Devorah, yeah, good. So the first thing the parsha begins with is this mitzvah of preparing the shemen zayis, the olive oil, for the menorah. The parsha says, "V'atah tetzaveh es bnei Yisrael." You, Hashem, is speaking to Moshe. You should command the children of Israel. The yikhu elecha shemen zayis zach chasis la'ama or lahalos ner tami, that you should take for yourself pure olive oil pressed for a light to bring up a constant flame. It's a peculiar placement of this commandment. Again, remembering what we have been reading over the last few weeks. Last week we read about the actual construction of the Mishkan and the utensils of the Mishkan. And this week we read about the Big Day Kahuna. It's hard to know why the Torah placed this commandment to prepare oil for the menorah between the two parshios. It would have made more sense to either place it immediately next to the construction of the menorah, or even better, to place it later when the Torah describes how the menorah works, which it does a number of times, for instance, in Parshas Bahaloscha. But why is it here separating the two parshios describing the construction of the Mishkan and the appointing of the sons of Aaron as Kohanim and the garments that they wear, the Big Day Kahuna? So I saw a pshat actually quoted in the name of the Eben Ezra in the stone art scroll Chumash. And then I looked at the Eben Ezra, and I'm not sure he's really saying it, but I like the explanation, so I'm going to go with it anyway. And I think it might be that he is saying it. He says as follows. I'll read you his words. He says, Ki kasher hishlam nesaper kol klei kodesh. The Torah completed describing all the holy utensils, va'parochas, va'mishkan, va'ol, va'michse, and the curtains, and the mishkan, and the different covers of the mishkan, mizbeach ha'ola, and the altar, the outer altar, and the chatzer, the courtyard, and the curtain separating the courtyard from everywhere else. Hachar lefarish misharsei hamishkan. After describing the structure of the Mishkan, the Torah begins to describe the people who serve in the Mishkan, i.e., the Kohanim. And he says the next line, what their service is. Be'atzmam ein zar itam. No foreigner is with them. Be'hachel, and it begins zayis, that they should bring up a flame with olive oil. Lo b'shemen zar, not with foreign olive oil. So it's interesting. He said, the Eben Ezra is saying, just like there's such a thing as a czar, meaning only those who are qualified for the priesthood can serve in the Mishkan. You can't have a czar. So too, the shemen of the menorah, it has to be pure olive oil. It can't be foreign oil. So the stone takes it to the next step. And I like the explanation either way. This notion of shemen zayis zah, pure olive oil, has to be the most pure it could be. Rabbis tell us that only the very first oil that is released when you stamp or press the olives the first time can be used for the menorah. So just as we demand that purity for the olive oil used for the menorah, so too we demand that purity for the Kohan and the priests who serve in the Mikdash. They have to be absolutely pure in terms of their midos, their attributes, and in terms of their intent and their kavana. So that's, again, an explanation why begin with the Shemen Zayisach. It is a mashal in terms of the purity of the Kohanim. We demand pure olive oil, no zar, no Shemen zar, and we demand pure Kohanim, no zarim, no foreigners who work with them, and then no ulterior motives, as they do the Avodah in the Mishkan. Interesting idea from the Ibn Ezra. Maybe we'll mention a bit more about the oil in a second. I just first wanted to point out, and this I don't have the best answer to, but something that really stands out at you, Ramban's Forner both notice when you read the beginning of this parsha, which is the emphasis on the Atah and you Moshe. So if you look at the beginning of the parsha, it first says V'atah Titzaveh, as you mentioned, Hashem says to Moshe, you should command the Jews regarding the olive oil. And then it says, "V'atah hakrev lecha, you Moshe should bring close Aharon and his your brother and his children." And then "V'atah tetaberel kol chachmei lev." And pasuk gimel in parak chavches, you specifically should speak to all the wise people. So three times, "V'atah, v'atah, v'atah," and you, and you, and you, and that it stands out to you because God has been talking to Moshe for the last two parshios. I don't know if there was anyone else in the room, but clearly, if he's talking to Moshe, he means you. I'm talking about you. Now, Mefarshim comments that there are other things where Hashem described the Mishkan and the Kelim to Moshe, but it didn't mean he had to do it. It meant he had to command other people to do it. So he says, you're going to make the Aron. Moshe wasn't the actual architect who constructed the Aron. That was Bezalel. He actually just commanded Bezalel to do it. So in this Parsha, it says, no, Moshe, you have to do these three things. You have to command the Jews regarding the olive oil. You have to appoint Aharon a Kohen. And you have to get the wise men to construct the big day kahuna. Why is Moshe necessary for these few things? So different answers to each of them. I'll mention just two briefly. So one regarding the oil, Ramban notes, and it's a bit, I have a bit of trouble with this answer, but that there's a very high standard for what constitutes pure olive oil, Shemen Zayis Zach. And only Moshe was entrusted with making sure that the oil met the standard. So he had to command the Jews and then thereby inspect the oil. Regarding the Kohanim, so many of the Farshim, including Or HaChaim, point out that actually originally Moshe Rabbeinu was supposed to be the Kohen. And that God was going to make him the family, which was the source of all the priesthood, and his descendants would have been Kohanim also. He lost out on that privilege in his original conversation with Hashem when Hashem appoints him to be his messenger and taking the Jews out of Mitzrayim. Moshe refused numerous times. And the Medrash says, look, when Hashem says to Moshe, you're going to go into back to Egypt, and Aharon, your brother, is going to greet you happily. In that moment, he's saying, because Aharon, is so faithful and so willing to do what I ask him to do, he's going to be the Kohen, and you lose out on that privilege. Why is that relevant to this? So many of the Mefarshim say Moshe needed to atone for that sin of not being loyal enough to God in that original conversation. So the way he does Teshuvah is, it's not just that Aharon is the Kohen in his stead, but Moshe is the one who has to appoint Aharon personally and his sons as Kohanim, and specifically appoint others to prepare the Big Day Kahuna for Aharon and his sons. So as to cement the point, you weren't loyal enough when I asked you to go to Mitzrayim, therefore you lost the Kahuna, so now you're not going to be the Kohen, and so instead you're going to
tell Aharon and his brothers to be the Kohen instead, and you are going to have to be the one to make sure that they have their big tikkun ready. So as to say, if you do tshuva, part of doing tshuva is sort of accepting your punishment, saying like, okay, I'm going to be the one personally to make sure that others are the Kohanim because I lost out on that. But just another point I would suggest, and I haven't seen this anywhere, why and you and you and you, many in Mefarshim know that Tetzaveh is one of the main parshios, one of the only parshios in which Moshe's name is not mentioned even one time, which really stands out because God is talking to Moshe the entire time, and yet he never mentions him by name. So I just wonder, taking it in a different direction, maybe even though that is so, and maybe that relates again to the fact that because Moshe lost out on the kahuna, the parsha which describes the role of the Kohanim and their special begadim doesn't mention his name, but Hashem still emphasizes his unique role in the process. Even though he's not going to mention him by name, it's still and you and you and you. Meaning to say, even though you're not the Kohen, but you're still instrumental in making sure that there can be Kohanim and can be Big Tikkahuna. And maybe there is a bit of a lesson to learn from that, even if for whatever reason we have to, not choose someone for a role or something like that. It's not going to be you, but you still have, a part of this process. It's important to give people that sense of importance, even if they can't play the role they wanted to play. So that's in regard to the Atah, the Atah, the Atah. Moshe wasn't the one who was the Kohen, but Hashem still says, you. It's on you to make sure that this goes well, either as a part of a Shuvah process, or maybe even to give him still that feeling of chashivas, that feeling of importance. Moving on to the mitzvah of the menorah for a minute. So the Torah has a, and this still is first pasuk in Tetzaveh, it has a unique, a particular description of the way that the flames of the menorah work. It says that you gather this oil, lahalos ner tamim, lahalos, to bring up a constant flame. You might have suggested that the term, the verb the Torah should have used is lahadlik ner tamim, to kindle a constant flame. What ought we learn from this word leha'alos? Rashi has a comment here, which is really just right for making a drasha out of. Rashi says, "Madlik acheteh shalheves ole," that you ought to light the candles or the oil of the menorah until the flame ascends on its own. Right? Then when we light a candle, you at first you just have to ignite the wick. But then eventually the flame begins to rise by itself, and that's the way you ought to light the menorah. So in his inimitable way, the Sfas Emes uses this particular halacha about halakas ha-menorah to teach us a lesson about avodas Hashem generally. He says as follows: we shouldn't look as at avodas Hashem as something that we are forcing ourselves to do and something that is external. Meaning to say that when you're trying to do a mitzvah and you're sort of forcing yourself to do it as if it's something that's outside of you and now you need to bring it in, so that's not the right perspective. Rather, says the Sfas Emes, each of us has that spark inside of us. We have that neshama. We have that desire to serve God. We have that desire to be good people. And what we're doing when we try to do Avodas Hashem is to sort of unite that mitzvah with the spark we have inside of us. And once we light the spark, then it happens on its own. Then the shalheves is olam me'eleha. We just have to find that inherent connection we have with Torah and mitzvos, and then the inspiration and the enthusiasm will happen by itself. He uses a halachic language, and it's interesting. He says, matzah min es mino v'neor, that our minas mino, our neshama is one with the mitzvos. This is what we do. Mitzvos and Torah, that ought to be natural for us. We really down do have that natural connection. It's just a matter of lighting that original spark so that the flame can then burn on its own. And I think that's a generally important perspective that with any mitzvah, whether it's davening or learning or chesed, etc., The goal ought to be to find a way that it resonates with us. If we're just trying to make ourselves do it and make ourselves do it, we're missing something. But there ought to be a way of finding that natural connection. That how do I connect with this? How is my flame going to ignite itself and rise on its own? I just need to find that connection, find the way that this mitzvah resonates with me. And then it shouldn't be such hard work, such a hard avoda. It should be something that's natural. That's the Sfas Emes on the Ha'alos Ner Tamid, to bring up the flame, not just in the menorah, but in all of our avodas Hashem. Describing the big day kahuna, Yupsukim later, the Torah tells us the Asisa big day kodesh, the Aharon Aficha, lechavod ulesefares. That in Pasuk Beis and Parak Chavches, that you should make holy clothing for Aharon, your brother, for honor and for glory. So how are we to understand those last two words, for honor and for glory? Generally I would say that honor and glory are vanities. We shouldn't be pursuing honor and glory. We should be humble and be content with the fact that we're serving Hashem. So where do you get the covenant of Tefaras from? So the simple explanation is that these were the Kohanim. They were the representatives of God in the Mikdash. And the reason they had this sort of clothing, which is really beautiful and multicolored with gems on it of all sorts, and the ephod had these two big gems, and the choshen had 12 gems, each corresponding to the tribe, and a golden head plate that sits. It's royal clothing, the royal garments, because since the Kohanim are serving in the Mikdash, it's important that they have a certain amount of respect and glory from the people. And so these are royal clothing, l'chavod l'sefaras of the Kohanim, for the glory and splendor, the honor of the priest, that the people ought to respect them. And hopefully then they respect themselves as well. But the Malbim, in the way he really changes your mind on the Parsha, has a different reading of l'chavod l'sefaras. Malbim says that kavod sometimes is a reference to the soul, a reference to the neshama. For instance, every day we say in davening, l'ma'an in Mizmor Shir Chanukah Sabayis l'David, the end of that parak at Tehillim says, l'ma'an yizarmercha kavod, below yidom. So that kavod should give you praise and not be silent. What does kavod mean in that context? Honor should give you praise and not be silent, says the Malbim. The kavod there is a reference to the soul. Our souls should honor you and give you praise and not be silent. So kavod can sometimes be a reference to the neshama. Says the Malbim, why, of course, these were beautiful external garments, but the purpose of the external garments isn't solely so that the Kohanim have a beautiful aesthetic appearance as they serve the Mikdash, but rather it is to inspire them to have internal garments, beautiful internal garments. What are the beautiful internal garments? Their midos, their character, their purity, their internal purity. So says the Malbim, l'ma'an yizarmercha kavod, excuse me, l'chavod l'sefares, you should make holy clothing for kavod, also is a reference to the fact that the Kohanim have to have beautiful clothing for their neshama. They have to have beautiful character traits which adorn their soul. What's kavod and tefaras? Malbim says we have certain natural midos, certain innate character traits that we're born with. That's kavod. Tefaras is when we work on something, when we work in ourselves, we glorify Ribono Sholam. When there's something that we are not naturally so good at, and we work on ourselves and sharpen our character. And that's Sefaras. And so what Hashem is telling Moshe Rabbeinu is the Kohanim need to know that it's not just about the external clothing, but it's also about their internal character. Connecting that to the first part of our lesson, of our shiur today about the Shemen, so the Malbim. Again, it's certainly a drash more than pshat. It's sort of a way of deriving moral lessons from the text, but he also relates this to the Shemen. Why is Moshe so involved with the Shemen? Says the Malbim, I'll read you his language,
Ha-Torah ve'Adam chiburam hu ner The Torah and the human, their connection, the connection between the Torah and humans, is God's candle in the world. Ha-Torah hi la'av, the Torah is a flame, mishviv ha-yoshi b'shamayim, and that flame emanates from the spark of heaven. It's a spiritual spark. Ve'ha'adam b'shnei chalakav, and a person with his two parts, their soul and their body, avuka sho'eves oro, a person can be a torch which bears the flame of the Torah. Gavo psila neteles, his body is a wick. Nishmaso shemen zayis zach, his soul is pure olive oil. Bahaskamasam vahatzmadam, by putting them together, Yismale habayis kulo ora. The whole building will be filled with light. The whole world will be filled with light. So that is to say that Moshe Rabbeinu, says the Malbim, who was the arbiter of the Torah, who brought the Torah to the Jewish people, Hashem commands him to make sure that through this avodah of the Mishkan, symbolized by the menorah, that the Jewish people can be the candle for the Torah in this world, that we can be the wick, that our bodies can be wicks, and our neshamas can be that pure olive oil to allow the Torah, the light of the Torah, to kindle the world. And that's sort of the symbolism of the shemen and the big day kahuna described here in the beginning of the parsha. And just a very basic point here, while all, of course, the big day kahuna are essential, and the Torah tells us that if a kohen serves without the big day kahuna, it's a very severe penalty. They could be chayav misa, they could be liable for death. So there is an emphasis on a certain way of looking. But the purpose of that is to remind the Kohanim of whom they ultimately serve and the role that they ultimately play, and to give them a sense of importance, but also a sense of duty. And what the Malbim and all these Lama Farshim are saying is, if it leads to the opposite, which it often did in the first Beis Hamikdash and times in the second Mikdash, where the Kohanim saw themselves as sort of this aristocracy and they're above the people, so then it's not the Chavrus HaSefaros. That's not for honor and glory. That's the opposite. It demeans the Avoda. And we always have to make sure our external appearance is just symbolic of our internal purity. Moving on a little bit further in the Parsha to a totally different discussion, there's a This, as I mentioned before, a description in Tetzaveh of what the Kohanim would ultimately do when they inaugurate the Mishkan, right? When the Mishkan service begins. There's an inaugural process, the Yemei HaMiluim. And in that description, there is a unique feature of one of the Karbanos, and that is the Karban Chatas, right? If you look in Perek Chavtes, Pasuk Yadalid, it says, V'es besar ha'par v'es oro v'es persho, tisrof ba'ish michutz la'machaneh ha'tashiv. So we're talking about one of the sacrifices that the Kohanim brought, and that is the par l'chatas, a cow for a sin offering. And the Torah says that the flesh of this cow and its skin and its insides should be burnt in fire. Outside of the machaneh chatashu, it is a sin offering. What's unique is that this is generally not the case. When we have a chatas chitzona, meaning a carbon chatas that's brought in the outer part of the mizbeach, where the blood is sprinkled in the outer mizbeach and not inside, usually it is not totally burnt up. Usually, part of it is burnt on the altar, and part of it is eaten by the Kohanim. This chatas brought at the beginning of the Mishkan service during the Yemei HaMiluim is unique in that it is totally burnt up. And that usually doesn't happen. The question is, why is that so? Why was this carbon chatas? Here the Kohanim are just beginning their avoda. Why didn't they have the privilege of eating the meat of that Karban Chatas? So if Moshe was the one who did the avodah, why didn't he get to eat the meat of the Karban Chatas? So that's the question. I'll present to you two different approaches.
The first is that of the Ramban, who really has a creative approach to this. He says something which I would not have said, but he's the Ramban. He says Hashem saw into the future when he told them to bring this par lechatas. Why did they bring a cow for a sin offering? God anticipated the chet egel hazahav. He anticipated the sin of the golden calf. And that's why it's a par. That's why it's a calf. Okay. So why does that relate to the fact that the chatas is totally burnt up? Says the Ramban, we have later in the Torah a par kohen hamashiach. That if the kohen gadol accidentally sins, so then he brings a special chatas offering. That chatas offering, the blood is sprinkled on the inside of the Mishkan, on the inner Mizbeach, and therefore it is totally burnt up. And if you think about the Egel Azav, one of the hardest things to grapple with is the fact that who ultimately constructed the Egel Azav? It was Aharon HaKohen. And whatever his motivations were, and we have to assume he wasn't just worshiping Avodah Zarah, he was after Aharon HaKohen, and if he really did, he wouldn't have continued to be the Kohen Gadol. So the point is, he made some sort of misjudgment. He made a mistake, whether that was making sure the sin would be on him and not the people, as the Ramban suggests, he wanted to be the one to take the sin upon himself. The point is, it was a chatas for the Kohen HaMashiach. The Kohen Gadol made a big mistake. So Ramban says the rule really is that a chatas for a Kohen Gadol who errs ought to be brought to the inside of the Mizbeach and therefore totally burnt up. But when the Mishkan was inaugurated, there really wasn't any inside and outside yet. There was no sanctification. There was no distinction between the inside and outside of the Mishkan. It was just being sanctified at that point. Therefore, Ramban says this is really a Kohen, par Kohen HaMashiach, and it ought to be burnt completely, and the blood ought to have been sprinkled inside. There was not yet really an inside of the Mishkan, so the entire thing was burnt despite the fact that the blood was not sprinkled inside. But the point being, the reason it was totally burnt was because God was anticipating Aharon HaKohen's sin, and therefore he had this par hachatas be brought on his behalf, and that's why it was totally burnt. Again, very creative explanation. There's all sorts of philosophical questions you might ask. What if Aharon didn't sin? Did he have free will? And this is always the question when a God anticipates something. Not going to get into those for now. I wanted to share with you Hirsch's explanation, which I find very inspirational. He says as follows. What is the symbolism of the fact that the Kohen eats the meat of a chatas? Says Reb Hirsch that while often it's the meat of the carbon is not part of the atonement process, that differs in regard to a chatas. We learn from this week's parsha, it says, V'ochlu osam asher kupar bohem. The rabbis say, Hab kohanim ochlim v'habalim mischaprim. The kohanim eat the flesh of the carbon, and the owner of the carbon, the owner of the offering, is atoned for. Why is that? Why does the kohanim eating the meat of the carbon bring an atonement for those who are bringing the carbon? Says Rav Hirsch, the message of the kohanim is that it is not just our soul that serves God. It is not just that we serve God when we're in the Mishkan or in the Mikdash or in the Shul, but our entire physical selves, our entire body and soul, our entire being ought to serve God. And our physical strength can also be sanctified. And so by eating from the flesh of the carbon, the message to the owner of the carbon is don't just focus on, you're trying to get back on the right path, you're bringing a sin offering. Don't just dedicate your soul to God, but your body and physical strength as well. How does that relate to the fact that this chatas was totally burnt up? Says Rav Hirsch, it's easy to say, I'm serving God with my body. And maybe, it's easy to have a nice kiddush and Shabbos and, have a good piece of kugel and some cholent and some chicken. Ah, l'chavod Shabbos Kodesh. I'm so holy. Is it really l'chavod Shabbos Kodesh? We have to be honest with ourselves. right? I love to say, they say that the Kotzker Rebbe used to say on Shabbos when he had a piece of kugel, l'chaven my baich, to the honor of my belly. Mean to say, listen, anybody could say I'm doing it for Shabbos, but I just want to enjoy myself. That's why I'm doing it. So says Rav Hirsch, only the Kohanim can say they're serving God with their body by eating the Karban Chatos. Only somebody who's been serving in the Mikdash day in and day out and dedicates their entire life to Avodas Hashem can honestly say, my whole body is serving God. Kol Atzmosai Tomarna. For a person, when Baal eats from the Karban, that's not part of an atonement. It might be an important part of the process, the mitzvah, but we can't so confidently say that that is totally Avodas Hashem. Says Rav Hirsch, and when the Mishkan was inaugurated, there were no real Kohanim yet. They hadn't become Kohanim. They were just becoming Kohanim. Therefore, they could not eat from the Karban Chatos. They hadn't yet reached the level where they can say they're bringing a kapara to the owners of the Karban by eating from the Karban. And therefore, this first Karban Chatos was totally burnt. The message that Rav Hirsch is saying is, on the one hand, we ought to dedicate our entire bodies to the service of God, and that our physical existence, eating and drinking, if synchronized appropriately, can be a holy endeavor if we do it for the right reasons and we do it so we have strength to do the things that are most important. But let's not fool ourselves. If that's not actually the case, don't blame. We should not ascribe our physical enjoyment to Avodas Hashem if it's not so. That requires a real avoda. It requires working on ourselves in real sincere purity, and that's why these first Kohanim could not eat from the Chatas. So, just summarizing what we've learned about today with one another, we talked about the Atot Tetzaveh, why we start with the Shemen Zayif Saf, Sezer Eben Ezra. Before we talk about the Kohanim, we talk about the pure olive oil because the Kohanim have to be as pure as the olive oil. We talked about the emphasis on Moshe Rabbeinu, the Atah, the Atah, the Atah, you. Number one, because as a part of his own atonement, he had to accept his punishment, not being the Kohen because of his previous sin. But also, I'm suggesting maybe since Hashem was not going to mention his name, he still wanted to say, it's you're doing it. You still have a special role to play. We talked about the Sfas Emes, Acha that we ought to find a resonance with the mitzvot until that inner flame rises by itself. We talked about the big day kodesh, the chavrul sefaras. The Malbim says not just for external honor from the people, but we have to have garments for our soul. And then finally, we talked about the chatas chitzona, the outer carbon. Why is this carbon chatas burned totally? Ramban says it's because it's a par kohen on Mashiach. A carbon for Aharon HaKohen in anticipation of the Chidei Galazav that took place before the inauguration of the Mishkan. And then the explanation of Rav Hirsch that the Kohanim weren't ready to eat the meat of the Karban Chatas because they had not yet served as Kohanim yet. Well, thank all of you for joining. Always a pleasure to learn with you. And wishing you a wonderful Shabbos and a happy Purim Khatan. Thanks, everybody.
Thank you.